Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
And gentlemen, let's get ready to be inspired! Introducing in the red corner, American Tennis! And introducing in the blue corner, your host for American Tennis, Mr. Chuck Creasy! Ladies and gentlemen, time to get in the game.
And hello once again, this is Coach Chuck Creasy, and it's another week of American Tennis. Every week on the UR Tennis Network, there are many shows that bring you up to date with what's going on in the world of tennis, and also pretty much, folks, we get to talk about whatever we want to on Blog Talk Radio, so we bring to you a lot of interesting topics on what's going on, the controversies, the battles, the civil wars that are going on in tennis, and a lot of good stuff as well. Lisa Stone has one of the hit shows, and it's every Tuesday at noon. We wanted to thank Jason Haynes and his American College Connection that comes on two hours from right now on the UR Tennis Network. And Coach Steve Clark really has just picked up a program, and Steve Clark is a fantastic coach. And last but not least, the high school program in Florida, and all of the programs on the UR Tennis Network, you can pick up by going to the UR Tennis Network, the letter U, the letter R, the number 10, and the letter S network, and go onto your iPhones or just punch up UR Tennis Network, and you can get every show. The last 3 years now that we've been with American Tennis, and the UR Tennis Network is over 5 years old. So we hope you listen to us each week. You can call in today if you'd like to my program, area code 714-583-6853. That's 714-583-6853. My website is chuckcreasy.net. You can get all the programs. You can also get my writings, my blogs. And I've got 6 books out there that I've written over the years. They're out there, my camps and other things at chuckcreasy.net. The mission of American Tennis, and we always say this, that the mission is to stand up and to speak out and say those things that need to be said. Doggone it, let's get them on the table. Enough of the just tiptoeing around and trying to be on the surface. We need to talk about real issues. We need your opinions, feelings, needs, not just the cliches and the facts. We ask you to stay professional, address issues, not people. And you can pretty much say what you want to. This is America. It's American tennis. This isn't Russian tennis. This isn't European tennis. This isn't French tennis. This is American tennis. And say what you want to say. Edmund Burke, the quote that I love the most is, all that it takes for evil to prosper is for good men, good people to do nothing. And I wanted to, at this point, tell you we got a great program this morning. We want to get to it. But we have Mr. Bill Emmendorfer on, and I was prompted. I've had Bill's son Brad on two or three times, and Bill was Brad was one of our nation's top players, and he was a team captain for me and a number one player, and just a great young man. But Bill has become a friend over the years, and he has a fantastic initiative going on right now with leadership training of our youth. And I just thought it would be a great opportunity to have Bill on. And Bill, I believe you're with us, aren't you? You can hear me, can't you?
Yes, Chuck, I'm here.
Great, Bill. Anyway. Well, appreciate you being on. And again, you've been in sports your whole life, and you've done so many things in the business world, and you've coached a championship son as well, or brought up a championship son. You've also been a coach. But, Bill, people might be asking why I brought you on here, but I'd like to go into your background first. If you could just talk about your background first, and then I want to go off and talk about the leadership initiative that you're doing, because so many things in tennis that we are not doing right now I think are really harmful. And but Bill, can you talk about your sports background, your career background a little bit, and the motivational work you're doing with youth leadership?
Sure, Chuck. I was fortunate enough to be raised in sports and fortunate enough to have a lot of good mentors. And I grew up in the 60s and played college football at the University of Tennessee, and played football and wrestled both in college and in high school, and was fortunate enough to play on a college team that lost five games when we were in college and finished in the top 10 every year, and to be one of the captains of Bill Battle's third team. Bill Battle's now the athletic director of the University of Alabama, and to really play with a bunch of great guys. And we weren't maybe great athletes, but we had really good people, and we did a lot of things well and didn't make a lot of mistakes and were able to win and understood the team concept. From there, I coached a couple of years and then went to dental school and practiced dentistry for a number of years, and then got into the restaurant business and did it. And now I'm doing two things. I'm running the Tennessee Sports Hall of Fame and also working on a wellness project with my roommate, college David Allen, who's a urologist. And so David and I have got a wellness initiative and a wellness company, but my love for sports has been something I've had my whole life. I had an inspirational Little League baseball coach named Bill Talley, who lives out in Odessa, Texas now. But Bill was born, he was a thalidomide baby, and was born without limbs and was an inspiration and was a taskmaster, and we worked very hard. And then came up in the old school where, you know, coaches were pretty tough and it wasn't quite the way it is today. But kids were different and generations different. And I know our parents probably said we were soft, but did a lot of things that we probably can't do today. And then had the privilege of raising three children. Two of them played tennis, or all three of them played tennis, but two of them played tennis significantly. Obviously, Brad played the most. He was played junior tennis and then played for you at Clemson, and you know, went on the satellites a little bit, and then was a teaching pro. Our oldest daughter, Heidi, played at Baylor School in Chattanooga, and then she decided she didn't want to play tennis anymore. And our youngest daughter, Rainey, was an all-state soccer player and decided she didn't want to play in college, but got a lot out of sports. And, you know, I personally believe that sports are a big part of the development of young people and the development of leadership. And so I've been excited that all of our children at least participated in sports. In fact, we're on vacation right now, and I had the privilege of walking out with my two daughters. Brad's gone to a baseball tournament with his son just for the day. But Heidi and Rainey and I worked out for 45 minutes to an hour this morning. And so it's been a family function that we do things together that are active. And we stayed active when your adult children want to come hang out with you and work out, that's really a blessing. So, but in talking about sports, sports is a great laboratory where you learn attributes that you can learn only through perseverance and endurance and overcoming adversity. And that's a big deal. And I can tell you mistakes I made in parenting, particularly Brad. And since we're talking about tennis, I can tell you that it's important that we let our children go through the process. And sometimes as parents, we enable our children, trying to spare them the pain of the process. And if we spare them the pain, we spare them the progress. And, you know, it's there's breakdowns before breakthroughs, and there's things that happen in life that you just have to go through. And one of the things, and Chuck, you and I have talked about it significantly, one of the things that's a real mistake, in my opinion, is when athletes lose, where character is built is in the consolation or in the backdrops of all tournaments, whether it's high school wrestling or kids club
Absolutely.
Wrestling or tennis. And so many times you see kids today getting pulled out of tournaments to protect a ranking and something that really and truly is insignificant in the big picture of things and in the development of a young person. Another thing I think that we're doing, and I read a great article just last week about it, is we're specializing our kids too early in life, and we're not creating athletes. We're creating one specific set of skills, but not creating their full athleticism. And I think it's important, particularly in youth, you know, when kids are 10 and 11 and 12 and 13 and those ages, that we get them to do multiple things, because you develop different skill sets and you develop different muscle groups and different types of muscle, whether it's explosiveness or endurance or, you know, or strength. And it's important to develop the whole athlete. And then the mental aspects of it, kids need to deal with success and they need to deal with failure. And one great thing about tennis, and Brad brought this to my attention, we were having some business struggles, and he showed up one day and he said, "Dad, your problem is you don't know how to fail." He said, "You don't know how to lose," is what he said. "You don't know how to lose." And one great thing about tennis is everybody loses. At some point in time, everybody loses. And the key is what you do when you lose. And that's where the real lessons in sports come through. I mean, winning begets winning, but what do you do when you lose? Do you fold your tent and go home, or do you persevere and emerge better and stronger than ever? And that's the greatest lesson in sports, in my opinion, is that failure, you have to, I tell my children, you have to fail forward. You have to fail forward, and that's what you have to do. And so you have to fail and be successful as you fail. And don't let the failure defeat you, but move forward. And then one of the things I see us doing as parents, that and it's funny because it's directly proportional to the investments you make in the sport. And tennis is an unusual sport because tennis is an expensive sport to get involved in, because
that's
in most
sure.
cases, you know, and that's one of the things I think hurts tennis, is tennis has not been a sport for the masses, or we lose a lot of athletes who tennis is not an option for. So the deal is that with tennis, you know, you've invested a lot of money, and most people that are parents of tennis players are professionals or corporate executives or things like that, and so they're used to kind of controlling things. And unfortunately, without even realizing it, sometimes your child kind of becomes your franchise. And you have unrealistic expectations of your child.
Yeah.
And you're going, "I'm spending $1 gazillion, and you can't hit a forehand." You
oh,
know,
boy.
And the kid gets trapped in that. And then the other thing you don't understand sometimes as a parent is the process. You got a kid that's playing tennis, and he's working his fanny off, and he's not getting better. Well, you know, it takes time to get better. Or, you know, he gets a new coach, and we change a serve or we change a stroke, and you're going, "Well, he was beating this kid last month, and now
yeah.
you've changed him, and he's losing." But if you don't change, you don't get better. And so you hit your peak, and there's a lot of times you see young athletes, hit a point, and they're winning when they're 10, but they can't win when they're 18 because they never move forward. They never did the right thing to move forward because they were too worried about what they were ranked when they were 12. And we as parents are the ones that kind of caused that problem. That's a big deal.
Bill, I want to jump into here just a second. You're saying so many things are fantastic. Spare the pain, spare the progress. Parents jumping in and putting a pillow under our kids' rear ends when they fail. But I, you know, there's so many things. Every time I'm with you or I've been with you, I'm inspired. You were able to speak to my team one time this spring, and you talked about, and I used this on my show a couple weeks ago, that in building a program, you need to have, first of all, create the right culture, learn how to compete, learn how to win, and then finally learn how to win championships. And what you're saying with parents is parents don't understand that process either. And I want to talk about that just briefly here, if you could. Would you mind jumping in there and sort of explain that? Because that was very well, a very good way of putting it. And because tennis is a deferred gratification sport. If you're not in love with the game, you're not going to ever enjoy tennis because it brings so much failure. You must be in love with the game, first of all, and you must be able to suffer through those love pangs of the failure. So would you mind elaborating on that just a little bit, and then I want to move on here to talk about your initiatives.
Yeah, well, part of the thing is, you know, you need to be realistic about what you want to do with the game, whether you want to be a recreational player whether you want to be a country club player, or whether you really want to be a player and develop your abilities. And one, you got to establish whether you have abilities, and if you do, then it's a long process, and you've got to be willing to go through the process. And as a parent, you've got to be willing to understand the process. And to be understand that the process is what it's all about. And it's not about I won the Southern Closed when I was 12. It's the process that I'm going through to develop. And a lot of that development comes through adversity. And a lot of that development, there's no shortcut for just hard work. And to be successful, you've got to work hard. One thing my dad taught me was, he said, the one thing you can always do is you can always outwork your competition. And there was a quote from the Navy SEALs, Chuck, I talked to you about the other day.
I've got it here. I was going to read it. I was going to read it, but you go ahead and say it. I've got the Navy SEAL article, folks, right here. And if you'll look up Navy SEALs Trained for Leadership, and basically, the article is a fantastic one. It's not too much. It's Navy SEALs Trained for Leadership Excellence. But the quote is this, about it starts up, the paragraph says that the world excellence requires more than commitment and just educational achievement. It says the SEALs can't afford just that much. Under pressure, according to SEAL lore, you don't rise to the occasion. You sink to the level of your training. That's why we train so hard. When I see how difficult and challenging it is to so many smart and talented organizations to innovate and adapt under pressure, I see people who are overeducated, but then they are undertrained, and this is frightening. And that says it all, Bill, about the training so hard. And I wanted to make this point about tennis. For the last 2 to 3 months, we've been talking about the dumb down in America. I was on a conference call yesterday, and I hung up. They had about 50 people in there. They weren't going to take many questions. But there's two things we're doing that are crippling, and one is the point system in tennis. But yeah, the biggest one is the dumbing down of our scoring system, the dumbing down of everything that we do. And this is the point, Bill. They believe that participation will breed excellence, where in fact only excellence will breed participation. And you've hit upon that in your statement that people need to figure that out. If you're just playing for fun, you're playing for fun. But if you want to compete, you need much more than that. So did I hit the quote about right there?
You did. You did. You know, there was an old adage, Coach Dickey, Doug Dickey, who was the coach of Tennessee and the coach of the University of Florida and then the athletic director of the University of Tennessee, used to say is that luck is when preparation meets opportunity, and the more prepared I am, the luckier I am. And you know, you hear people say, well, I was lucky. Well, you're lucky because you worked and you were ready for that opportunity and you were prepared
Absolutely.
To take advantage of it. So,
Absolutely.
You know, the old adage, luck is when preparation meets opportunity, and the more prepared I am, the luckier I get. And that's true. And talking about the process, people learn to win by winning, but it's something you have to learn. And you can't go from just not competing until to being a champion and then to winning multiple champions. And you have to love the competition. And, you know, whether it's right or wrong, I've always hurt more in losing than I have the joy of winning. And maybe that's messed up and maybe that's – but
no,
but
we've addressed that.
You.
That you're absolutely right. The best players and the best competitors hate losing more than they actually enjoy winning. But the hating of the losing is really what separates. So you hit it right there, Bill. But
you know,
go
and,
ahead.
And I can tell you, I was fortunate. I was blessed with being on successful teams from the time I started sports all the way through and never had to overcome a lot of adversity as far as losing, but it was a culture that was passed down from my coaches and from the upperclassmen, and those successes were passed down on what was expected of you and those expectations. But first, you just have to have a passion to compete. And to be honest with you, I love to compete to this day. The one thing I hate as I get older is not being able to compete at the level that I once did or not finding other people that really want to compete. And it's, you know, there's a real thrill of competition. So you've got to enjoy just the pure competition. It's something I used to say that when we'd get in ball games, and we had great teams, and I was blessed to be on great teams. But, you know, when you come off the ball, and I was a defensive lineman and an offensive lineman, and when you come off the ball and you kind of hit the guy, usually you know what you're up against in the first series of plays. And you know, about 70% of them, you know, if they're not in for a good fight, you know, it's going to be a pretty easy afternoon. But then you get those that, man, when you hit them, they hit back, and it's going to be a sporty afternoon. And that's when it really gets to be exciting and gets to be challenging. And that's what the thrill of sports is. You know, it's nice to win love, but when it really counts, it's when you're in a tie break in the third set and it's been 7-6, 6-7, and you're at 6-all, and you're in that tie break, and you can't shake it, and you got a guy, you know, and one thing Brad and I have talked about, and one thing that's unfortunate about tennis, particularly a high level of competition, whether it's at the collegiate level or even, you know, at the professional level, people that are not around tennis don't have an appreciation for what those guys do. And Brad was talking about playing in the Orange Bowl when he was 15 or 16 or somewhere in there and said, you know, how many 15 or 16-year-olds have a 4.5-hour match and persevere in that heat and do that?
Bill, I'm sorry, but they don't. Not many now. They're dumbing it down so bad that not many. But go ahead, finish your quote. I want to get on to that one in a minute.
But what happens is what you gain from that is so valuable. You know, you and I were talking the other day. We're talking about when Djokovic and Nadal played in Australia, and neither guy could stand up after the match. And
that's
that,
right. I was cheering.
That is as good as it gets. I mean, it does not get any better than two people that have poured out every ounce of energy that they have.
Right.
And you know, then one other thing, you probably touched on this, but we were touching on it this morning after Brad and his wife and son left to go to a baseball tournament. They had all these uniforms that they've gotten, and we've made it to where when a kid's 10, 11, and 12, they've got the same stuff the New York Yankees have. and they haven't played pickup ball in cutoffs and a ball that was taped together in a bathroom.
Yep.
And so they're doing it, but you lose that passion.
Yep.
That passion that you have. And one thing I was tickled to death with Brad's son today, they're out here, and we're down in Florida, and they're out here playing wall ball with a racket ball that I had in a bag, throwing it and fielding it all day long and doing stuff like that, you know, kids just don't do. And that's what you've got to have is that passion to do things. And that sort of thing. I'll tell you a funny story that Brad told Chuck. You can appreciate this. Darren Knight, who was Brad's best friend and his doubles partner at Clemson, and they competed with each other in Tennessee. But anyway, Darren just had twin girls, by the way, this week. But in the middle of all this, Darren calls Brad one day and he said, "I was just frustrated. So I just went out and hit against the wall for an hour. I just had to get some energy out." But it's that hitting against the wall that people aren't willing to do to get there. It's the same thing. Whether it's in wrestling, and all of our kids have done wrestling, not because I want them to be collegiate wrestlers, but they learn so much about themselves in that sport. And that's why I still believe that kids need to do multiple sports because it develops different things. Wrestling develops mental toughness and physical toughness. Tennis develops mental and physical toughness. But it doesn't if you're just going to play it at a recreational level. It's a fun game. It can be fun. And it can be a game for life. And everybody is not going to, you know, everybody's not going to be a professional basketball player or a collegiate basketball player or a high school basketball player. But everybody can play basketball.
Sure.
Everybody can play flag football. But the people that want to do it, we can't produce greatness doing what we do. It's kind of like the NCAA and a 20-hour rule and what coaches have had to do to get around it, so you can use your strength and conditioning guys to do things and you can do this and that. But if I wanted to be a pianist, I'd spend more than 20 hours a week playing the piano and no one would say anything about it. And I wouldn't have to have a separate coach to do what we do in sports today. We can deal with it, and we found ways to create excellence, but we've missed that. And even if you look at, I'm going to switch over to basketball, but even if you look at basketball, in today's world, so many of the Europeans come in with better basic skills than the Americans, because in a lot of cases we recruit kids and drive the bus and throw the basketball out there, and that's how we play. And what's happened in tennis, to some degree, is you've got coaches developing players, and you've got coaches someplace that said, "I'm going to recruit and drive the bus."
Bill, let me jump in there just a second. You know what? It is something that's going on around our country right now. We are not creating excellence. We are creating. We're creating participation sports or after-school activities. We are not creating championship athletes and sports. We're creating band members, not someone who plays the violin in the orchestra. And that's our problem, and that's what I wanted to go to right here. I've got to go to a commercial, Bill, and then I want to start getting into the initiative that you're creating for leadership training. We will not ever create excellence through just participation. That's not the way it works. I once, I throw this in there, and to all our listeners, I once, in a group of tennis people, I said, "How many in here have ever been bowling?" And I said, 100% of them raised their hand. "Now, how many of you are bowlers?" Nobody raised their hand. I said, "That's what we've done. We're creating bowling. We're fishing with a barbless hook. We're doing just everything backwards. And why in the world are we doing this?" We will be right back. This is Coach Chuck Creasy with American Tennis.
This is Coach Coach J.P. Weber of the We Coach Tennis Radio Show. In my 30 years experience in coaching tennis, I've never seen a better tennis training situation for children than Coach Creasy's Total Tennis Training Camps. Chuck Creasy has coached them and trained them in every arena from juniors to collegiate to professional tennis, and over 15,000 children have improved their games at his summer tennis camps. Find out more at chuckcreasy.net. That's chuckcreasy.net.
This is Coach Chuck Creasy, and I wanted to remind you about our 2015 Total Tennis Training Camps. Look at chuckcreasy.net, and you can find about our camps in Cookeville, Tennessee, the weekend of July 10, 11, and 12. See our camp in Lexington, South Carolina, and a camp in Sumter, South Carolina, and all of our camps and training situations throughout the year. Look forward to seeing you. Look at chuckcreasy.net. Coach, at that, and I was up 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago cheering at that finals, Wawrinka and Djokovic, and you were talking about the great match at the Australian Open a couple years ago, and you know, when you see those paramount matches and those great battles, you know without a doubt why you're in tennis. But we've taken these opportunities, and we are taking these opportunities to just stand up and be strong and to be tough. We're doing that in our country. Now, I wanted to ask you, we have a problem in our country. There's no doubt about it. Leadership seems to be going to people who dumb things down. They say there's nothing more pathetic than small people in big positions. I'm not saying everyone is that way, but it just seems like we are not stretching the kids, whether it is because it's not fashionable, it's not politically correct, et cetera, et cetera. Sports is the training ground. So you've picked one of the – I'd like for you to talk about your sports initiative that you're doing in trying to work with our young people and trying to create leaders through some of the major – athletic conferences, and what exactly your idea and your initiative is here that you're working on.
Well, we're doing two things. One is the Tennessee Sports Hall of Fame, which I was president, and the president retired, so I ended up serving as executive director. I've looked at the Sports Hall of Fame and museum and said, what are we doing with it? And to quote one of my good friends that I played college ball with, Tom Johnson, he said, if we're just honoring a bunch of old fat linemen, we're kind of wasting our energy. And so what we've done is we've taken the platform of the Tennessee Sports Hall of Fame, and we've created an initiative and an outreach to go to the schools and to go to at-risk centers and go to other parts of the community and to teach leadership skills through sports. And to use examples of those attributes and how those attributes were either developed in individuals or are developed through sports, and to try to instill in the young people those attributes that you can only get through hard work and goal setting and success and failure and getting up off the mat and doing it again and celebrating some of the great things in life. In fact, we at Tennessee Sports Hall of Fame created a whole new category in a luncheon that honors some things that wouldn't get honored normally. And this year, for example, we honored a kid that played tennis at the University of Tennessee and died of cancer. And what happened was that this young man persevered and showed so much courage that it was an inspiration to everyone that you saw. And it was an inspiration to his team, but it was an inspiration to the community, an inspiration to his family, and an inspiration to the entire state, because even when he was going through chemotherapy and was so sick to even do anything, his refuge was to go to tennis, and if he couldn't hit, he'd lay on the couch in the team lounge just to be around his buddies. And what you had is you had the strength of a team, and that was pretty doggone special. And you know, that's an example of what courage is. And then we've had some examples. We had a guy who we honored a guy this year, and you talk about great values in sports. We had a guy that played golf at Middle Tennessee State University and qualified for the U.S. Open, but on his way home couldn't decide if he'd grounded his club, and called the USTA and said, "I might have grounded my club," and no one knew about it, and didn't qualify for the U.S. Open because of a stroke penalty. Now, that's real character. I don't know. I mean, I don't know if I would have had the courage to do that. But you talk about something that, I mean, those are lessons. Those are two lessons in sports. Now, we've used that to go out and reach out. We're celebrating those people, and we found ways to celebrate people that may not be inductees into a Hall of Fame but are doing some things that are really unbelievably neat. And sports of all kinds, I had the privilege this year to go to a college rodeo, and it was a team in Martin, Tennessee that won the national championship. And to go
UT
to a
Martin.
College rodeo.
UT Martin.
UT Martin. And to go to a college rodeo and see kids that get almost no recognition, and you talk about mom apple pie in America, it was all there. And it was every value that's really good. And these kids, you talk about neat. It was just neat. And competing and loving what they're doing and taking real risk. Those are the things that develop character, and those are the things that develop the team. One of the hard things in tennis is creating a team concept in an individual sport.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, in basketball you can turn it around with a couple players. In football you need a whole team. When you bring in your guys for a tennis team, you got all these individuals, and everybody thinks they're going to play number one when they get there, first of all, and then they get their egos checked pretty quick. And then, you know, everybody's still pretty self-centered, and to mold that into a team where the good of the team is greater than the good of the individual is tough, because these guys have grown up as individuals. In fact, I wish we did more team stuff like Junior Davis Cup and like Zonals.
Right. Now, Bill, the downside of this, though, with team competition, it's great as far as the camaraderie, but it does pigeonhole players. I mean, you agree there. I mean, we really, our kids, there's got to be a way to breed in the camaraderie, but still allowing excellence to come forward. My quick question would be, okay, so what, talk about the initiative of leadership training, that how would this happen if we got, say, some major sports programs to just say, hey, look, this is about the only place we're creating excellence and where we're creating leaders is in the sports field. How will we do this with mentoring programs, with this sort of how would we go about doing this?
Well, I mean, what we've done is we've created a curriculum, and we've taken it to schools, We've taken it to after-school programs. We've taken it to other programs, and we're doing that, and we're mentoring these kids with using athletes, ex-athletes, using films and videos about athletes, using testimonials, and exposing them into the balance of holistic things like the importance of doing well in school. I mean, if you're having a crisis academically because you're about to fail a subject, it's hard to produce. Or if you're not getting enough rest, or if you're not taking care of yourself nutritionally, and trying to get these kids to understand that one part of your body doesn't function outside of the other anything else. And if there's dissension within your team, then leaders have to step up and do the right thing. I mean, you know, there's times that you have to call people out. One of the things about great teams, Chuck, is if you have great teams and you have great upperclassmen leadership, it makes coaching a whole lot easier because your players take care of their own issues. You don't let things happen. You police yourselves. You know, coaches don't have to be babysitters and policemen. They can actually be coaches. And kids need to, the players need to take care of the players. And if the kid's out of line, the players need to step up and take care of that if they care enough about themselves and care enough about the team and care enough about their teammates. Because that's critical. And that's what we've got to teach people to do. Too many times in today's world, it doesn't affect me. I'm just going to walk away from it, and whatever happens, happens.
Without a doubt.
And even if it's your buddy. I mean, but you've got to, and that's true leadership. I mean, that is true leadership. It's doing the right thing instead of doing what may be politically correct. And there can be a significant difference in the two.
Now, Bill, we've got all of the money we need. United States, Great Britain, France, and Australia. Those four countries have more money than anybody. Those are the four Grand Slam countries. But isn't it interesting that only Andy Murray is the only champion we've had in the last 10 years out of those countries? So, I mean, we've got everything in place. We've got the USTA, we've got the ITA, we've got the all these organizations, but they basically are these just feel-good organizations? I mean, really, if you were the grand executive of all of the tennis in the United States, what would be some of the things that would make sense for you to do? I mean, where do you see we're dropping the ball, and what do we need to do a little different?
Well, there's a couple things. I mean, if you look at sports where Americans are flourishing, It's those athletes have a passion, whether that passion is to an escape from a neighborhood that's bad, or a system that's bad, or a thing of poverty or whatever. What's happening in, I think, and it's not just tennis; it's a lot of sports. We're in a situation where it's an affluent deal. We don't let our kids fail. We don't. Push them hard enough, and we don't encourage them enough, and they don't have a passion. You got to have a passion, and the only way you can have a passion is it's a love for it, and we get some people that do that, but it's few and far between. And what happens is, look at Djokovic, for example. Comes out of a country that's war-torn, learns to play tennis in a swimming pool, for goodness sakes. I mean, you know, to be great, you've got to have that drive and that passion. I mean,
yep.
I mean, look at LeBron. I mean, LeBron has great natural abilities, but look at his background. Look where he came from. Look what he became. And too many of our kids, Mom and Dad, it's okay, honey. You got a big trophy when you're 12, and you're great, and that's fine. But that's okay. Everybody's not going to be great, and I'm glad we've got a sport that everybody can play forever. But to build greatness, you've got to find people with passion and people with a work ethic that's second to none, and we don't see that much.
Right.
I mean, we really
Bill,
don't.
Bill, have you seen the movie Whiplash?
I have not.
Okay, I'm going to play a 3-minute clip here from the movie Whiplash, where the hard-nosed, probably cruel people. A lot of controversy over this movie because people think this guy was over the top. But if you would listen to it and comment on it, but this guy finally got out of the kid what he wanted. But this is sort of one of the scenes where he's explaining what he was doing here. Listen,
I'm sorry.
Listen,
no, listen, hey, I'm sorry. I get it. I know.
And first of all, let me tell everybody there's some bad language here. So if your children are listening, tell them they can't listen. That's just a heads up.
I'm sorry. No, listen.
Nah,
hey,
I'm sorry.
I get it. I know I made enemies. I'm conducting a little well. They brought back the JVC Fest this year. They got me opening in a couple of weeks with a pro band.
That's great.
Yeah, it's all right. Truth is, I don't think people understood what it was I was doing at Schaefer. I wasn't there to conduct. Any fucking moron can wave his arms and keep people in tempo. I was there to push people beyond what's expected of them. I believe that is an absolute necessity. Otherwise, we're depriving the world of the next Louis Armstrong, the next Charlie Parker. I told you that story about how Charlie Parker became Charlie Parker, right?
Joe Jones threw a cymbal at his head.
Exactly. Parker's a young kid, pretty good on the sax, gets up to play at a cutting session, and he fucks it up. And Jones nearly decapitates him for it. And he's laughed off stage. Cries himself to sleep that night. But the next morning, what does he do? He practices. And he practices and he practices with one goal in mind, never to be laughed at again. And a year later, he goes back to the Reno. And he steps up on that stage and he plays the best motherfucking solo the world has ever heard. So imagine if Jones had just said, well, that's okay, Charlie. I was all right. Good job. And Charlie thinks to himself, well, shit, I did do a pretty good job. End of story. No bird. That, to me, is an absolute tragedy. But that's just what the world wants now. People wonder why jazz is dying. Amen. And every Starbucks jazz album just proves my point, really. There are no two words in the English language more harmful than good job.
But is there a line? You know, maybe you go too far and you discourage the next Charlie Parker from ever becoming Charlie Parker.
No, man, no. Because the next Charlie Parker would never be discouraged.
Yeah.
The truth is, Andrew, I...
And, Bill, you can see the power of this movie and the controversy there. This guy was abusive, basically. He bullied his students. He got fired, and he's talking with one of the students that turned him in here. At the end, you know, your thoughts, your comments here.
Well, you know, it took me back to my college days because days we used to practice in the stadium. Back then we had artificial turf. Tennessee has natural turf now, but with days we practiced in the stadium, we'd walk down to the stadium and the band would be practicing. And the band was led by a taskmaster named Dr. J. Julian. And he was one of the great band directors of all times. And they were famous for a circle drill, and no one would ever be out of step or out of tune. And Dr. Julian would sit in the stands with a blowhorn and a sound system, and he could pick out anybody that was out of step or out of tune. And you would hear him berating these guys, and I promise you, their practices were pretty close to as hard as ours, and he had no tolerance for someone that was incompetent. And it was very interesting. I'm going to tell you a story about a guy named Buddy Bennett. And Buddy Bennett was defensive secondary coach at the University of Tennessee in 1970. And Buddy did not believe in having team meetings in a meeting room. He'd have them on the field. And the rest of us, particularly the linemen, we would take bets each day on which defensive back was either going to pass out or throw up first, because every day that would happen to somebody. And they would work till they literally crawled off the field. And one day he asked them, they came in the next day, and he asked them, he said, "Did you boys eat supper last night?" They all said, "Yes, sir, we did." And he said, "Well," he said, "I'll tell you, I ran my bird dogs yesterday, and they couldn't eat, so I didn't work hard enough." And he said, "They set a record. We set a record that year that this is interesting. We set a record in takeaways, and you can look it up. We set a record in takeaways in 1970 that stands to this day. It stands, and in 2015, the record still stands. We had 57 takeaways in an 11-game season. And we had, of those 57 takeaways, 39 of them were interceptions, because those guys understood how to break on a ball, and they did things that were others thought were impossible to do. They did. And it went back to Buddy Bennett and his passion for excellence, that what some people would consider abusive was something that every one of those players to this day will tell you that they love the man and respect the man and the things they did. I mean, of that, one of them is my roommate, and who's a urologist in Athens, Georgia. The other is a guy that was a walk-on, Tim Towns, who's a PhD in molecular biology and head of research at the University of Alabama, Birmingham. The other day I was with Tim, and they're doing a really neat thing with stem cells where they can correct the faults in stem cells. He said, "We did 500 experiments that failed till we got one that was successful." Now, Tim got that perseverance on the dadgum football field playing for Buddy Bennett and Gary Wyatt. And that is a passion for excellence and something like this movie describes. When you fail 500 times and you don't give up because you believe in what you're doing, or you get up, or you crawl off the field, but then you set the NCAA record that stands for 40 years. I mean, those things,
Bill,
don't happen by happenstance.
Bill, I'm scared what you say here. Part of the Navy SEALs thing is, says you incentivize excellence, not competence. Competence goes up and down, but the excellence what was Vince Lombardi's quote was, "We will seek every day perfection, and although perfection is not possible, we will catch excellence in return." And but the point is, you're saying, I don't think that there is a chance to try to get excellence out of young people anymore, because people, I've got this quote, I believe now, I say most young athletes today would rather fail with a good excuse than to pursue excellence to the level that is inside of them. So what are we going to do? I'm asking you again, if you're the executive director, we only got 7 or 8 minutes here. If you're the executive director, you're the king of tennis here in the United States, what are some of the things that you would do immediately with tennis? Just, do you have any band-aids that we could do there? Because we got a problem. We got a problem. Everybody knows that.
Well, first of all, I'd find a way to get the best athlete. I would understand what levels tennis can be, and I wouldn't try to dumb down the top level. I try to raise the standards of all. And we've done the same thing in education. When we promote people in education, when we don't believe in holding people back,
we promote it. Well, one real quick thing I got to jump in. Do you know that 72% of our professional athletes are from towns under 50,000 people? The USTA has been on a march for 20 years to try to get inner city kids into tennis, because they believe that a lot of those kids are the best athletes. They've found out that most of your top athletes are in towns like Athens, Tennessee. towns with less than 50,000 people, where it matters a lot. So the first thing you would do, you would try to get the best athletes. I believe they're trying to do that. What else would you do, Bill?
Well, I would have those athletes learn to work and learn about values. And you know, practice doesn't make perfect, but perfect practice makes perfect. And you got to practice towards excellence. It goes back to what Bill said. I mean, I'd stop giving trophies to every dead burn city tournament.
Do away with participation trophies, okay?
Yeah, I think everybody gets a trophy. My 7-year-old grandson got a dead burn ring for winning a coach pitch baseball tournament. I mean, it's ridiculous. I mean, we've taken the passion away because we've taught them the reward is some meaningless trinket rather than the passion to achieve excellence in their chosen field.
Absolutely.
And it's this passion. I mean, I get passionate about anything.
Do we have the wrong people that climb down? And this is not an accusation. We have good people trying to run these organizations. But these bureaucracies do not promote the toughest, the most excellence-seeking people. They promote the people who are sort of average and who fit in, those that don't stand out. I mean, is that true? We don't seem to be promoting. I don't care if it's in politics or teaching or any leadership positions. We don't have the – what was the name of your defensive coach again? What was his name?
Buddy Bennett.
Buddy, we don't get the Bear Bryants and the Buddy Bennett's. We don't have those people out there. We fire these people for pushing people too hard. I mean, it's absurd. It's absurd. Is this the lawyers, you think? I mean, where do we go from?
Let me tell you something that's interesting, and it's not just in sports, but it's in all walks of life. You see it in medicine today. You see it in business. And what's happened is, in most, whether it's a pro football team or a pro, because of the business nature of what's going on, you have people who understand the business aspects of it, but they don't understand how the product is made. If it's in medicine, the physicians have lost control of medicine. It's the insurance companies and the hospital administrators. In sports, it's the agents, it's the managers of the teams, but it's not the guys. That's why at Alabama, I think they've done such a great job of hiring Bill Battle.
They hired a coach. Yeah, they hired an athlete to coach. They didn't hire somebody who never played sports, which a lot of these places are doing. Yeah, right.
He was a player, a coach, and a successful business person. And he's qualified to do what he needs to do. But so many of these guys in today's world, you don't have a guy that understands what it takes to make a program. That's why you have a influential alumnus and you have a weak athletic director and a weak college president, and you give a guy 3 years, he doesn't get it turned around. They don't understand you can't turn it around in 3 years. They don't understand what it takes to turn it around. Or they turn it around. It's like, what the best coach I ever played for? A guy named Larry Jones. Larry had coached. He played at LSU. He coached under Paul Dietzel at LSU and at West Point and at South Carolina. Came to Tennessee. Was a great defensive coordinator. Came there 1 year. Took the head coaching job at Florida State. And this was back 40 years ago. And failed miserably because the timing was bad. But they talked to him about brutalizing the game. Larry Jones was the last person to brutalize the game, but the press got a hold of it, and all of a sudden, Larry Jones, and that's what happened. So, you know, you got to understand the process. And the process is not without pain, so you can't spare the pain and develop excellence. Everybody been excellent has you got to be willing to bleed it. It's a sweat blood doing it. And if you don't do that, you're not going to be great. You can be average, but you're not going to be great.
Bill, we got some great challenges ahead of us. I'm hoping that the parents and players and coaches that are listening out there can take a lot of this to heart. It is a minefield to walk through and to be tough on kids. Most coaches now, I'm challenging you, coaches. A lot of us bail out when it gets real tough to deliver the tough messages. And when we don't deliver the tough messages, we don't get the best out of our kids. And, Bill, last word here. We've got about 30 seconds.
Chuck, one thing I'll tell you is if you've got parents, and I'm not an expert. I have no clue other than the mistakes I made with my children. But you're more than welcome to share my contact information with your parents up there. And,
okay.
You know, I don't have the answer,
okay.
But I can sure tell them what I screwed up. But
That'd be great.
You got to ask your kids to be excellent at whatever they choose to do. Just be excellent at what they choose to do, and help them find out what they really should do, because they have certain skill sets, and everybody's not going to be a neurosurgeon, and everybody's not going to be a plumber, but everybody's going to be something. And whatever you choose to do, you need to do it to the best of your ability. There's a deal I used to put in my kids' rooms, and they had to grow up with this. He said, your talents are God's gift to you. How you use them are your gift to God.
That's fantastic.
And use those talents.
Can you give your you want your contact given out? If people
could email
you?
They can email me. It's just Bill Emmendorfer, my name, BillEmmendorfer at usit.net.
Bill, thanks for being on here.
Made in America, born in a heartland, raised up a family, a King James and Uncle Sam. He's got the red, white, blue, fine high on a farm. Semper Fi tattooed on his left arm. Spent a little more in the store for a tag in the back of his USA. Won't buy nothing that he can't fix. With WD-40 and a Craftsman wrench, he ain't visitors. He's just made in America.
Reminding you are that you're in the process of winning or losing every day of your life, and it has very little to do with a win or a loss. Thanks, Bill Emmendorfer, for the great program today. We'll see you next week, Wednesday noon, American Tennis.
Opinions stated by various contributors to the UR Tennis Network and its programming are not to be considered as endorsed by the UR Tennis Network. Participants are encouraged to use their own discernments and draw their own conclusions. All information, products, and services offered by the UR Tennis Network are for personal use only. The UR Tennis Network does not confirm nor deny the validity or accuracy of information contained within the network. Any products or services provided for should be used solely for entertainment purposes. We emphasize the idea of keeping an open mind and not construing the products, services, or data as factual.